Hello, and thank you for listening to another episode of the Road Trip Playlist podcast. My name is Thomas Darrow, and I am your host. Today, I'm super excited to introduce my guest. I have loved and listened to Matt Carney since I was in high school. He was the second concert that I ever attended, and is just an all-around good dude. It was really fun to talk to him about his latest singles, Can't Look Back and Grand Canyon, how he started playing music and incorporating spoken word and hip-hop elements into his music. It's a really fun episode. I hope you enjoyed the interview as much as I did. Here it is after a quick word from our sponsor. But I have to tell you, like, this is a huge deal for me because you are the first concert that I ever paid for by myself. And so my second concert ever back in it was first year of college that I saw you in concert. And so this is like a big, and it was incredible. And it was a big part of me at that time. I wasn't super into music the way that I am now. And now it's so funny because it's such a big part of my life. And so I have to thank you for that. You're incredible. But so this is a big deal to have you on the Road Trip Playlist podcast. So thank you.
Oh man, that's such an honor. That's really cool to hear that actually.
Yeah, it's been really fun. And so yeah, this is a huge moment for me at least. And so I wanted to ask you, I like starting out by asking, all the artists that I have are on my Road Trip Playlist. That's where a huge part of when I fell in love with music was, first off, going to concerts like you, like yours, really falling in love with the concept of live music, but then also putting together these playlists because I was going on a lot of road trips at the time. And so I like to start out by asking artists who's on their road trip playlist.
I mean, for me, it changes, it fluctuates. I feel like my playlist is often influenced by where I am. But one of the usual suspects would be like John Prine. For some reason, driving around the country, he's come and gone a lot. I think Sufjan Stevens has come in and out of my road trips a lot. I opened for John Mayer once, so for some reason that Continuum album is like a huge part of my kind of formative years, so it still has a special place in me that seems to work well with moving images next to you. Tom Petty is always classic for me in playlists. I feel like I'm picking Usual Suspects.
Oh, you're picking my road trip playlist, so I'm like, is he on my Spotify page? and you are as well. Like I said, ever since I loved you before that concert. Like, I'm telling you, Ships in the Night was my like senior year high school song. It's like what I played over and over. I couldn't drive to school without it. And so this is, like I said, a really big deal. It's like, yeah, you and John Mayer were what I listened to in high school. So you naming both of those, I'm like, this is really cool.
That's awesome.
And then you have two new songs that are perfect for road trips, I believe. And so your two most recent releases, one as early as Friday, are perfect for a road trip, and that's Can't Look Back in Grand Canyon. And I think were they written at one of my favorite road trip destinations is Joshua Tree Park. Were they both written there on like a writing retreat?
They were, the kind of the genesis of this record started in Joshua Tree. When me and a friend, really me, my oldest high school friend, who's an inspiration, he's a painter, he's not a musician, Marshall Roman, he's probably the reason I'm doing anything creative. His family was always like really creative, and we'd go over there and his mom would be doing something weird with paint, and we would like take painting lessons or pottery, and it just kind of started this trajectory of me doing creative stuff. He's stayed one of my best friends since the fifth grade. He's the most amazing artist I've ever met. Wow. Still inspires me. So I said, hey, let's go out to the desert. You paint and I'll write. And so he just was in the corner painting paintings out in Joshua Tree. And I was writing, and I invited a friend from LA named Eli Teplin, who's like a crazy, awesome writer. And we just started writing songs. And weirdly enough, the record for the most rainfall in like the last 50 years happened while we were in Joshua Tree, which meant there were clouds and this house was totally off the grid. And so I brought all the studio gear and all these speakers. And I like flew across the country with my vintage 67 microphone. And like, I was so ready to just like record. And literally the whole house went dark, like no power, completely off the grid, no internet. We had nothing. We literally had a camp. We had a stove burning wood and that was it. And so we just picked up a guitar and we're like, I guess we should just start writing songs. I don't know what else we're going to do. We have no studio. And it ended up being this really fruitful journey of like starting this record. Both of those, like that Grand Canyon actually came with Eli and me back in Nashville a little bit after that. But a lot of songs kind of started the genesis during that season of just like, I couldn't do anything but pick up a guitar, which kind of reminded me of how I started writing, and it started the whole journey over again.
Wow. That, what an incredible story. And what a, such an odd thing to experience while you're in Joshua Tree. And so now it's put together this, this collection of an upcoming record for you. Is that right? That's what it sounds like.
That is, yeah, that is what we're, that is the goal. I mean, it's done. So yes, the record is done. We're just starting to put out songs. Can't Look Back. Yeah. Was that was one. So this desert kind of like journey really started the influence of this record. And for me, just, motion and place have always been a huge part of how I write and the music I love and kind of songs where you picture yourself moving somewhere and you're on a journey somewhere, leaving somebody, traveling to somebody. I don't know, just that that's always been how I've been influenced by music, how I've been inspired by music. And this record's probably one of the stronger versions of that.
Wow. I love that. And those are all things that, that I've loved about you and in what, in the music that you do create. And what are you most excited for people to hear in your upcoming work?
Well, I mean, I really love that song you talked about, Can't Look Back. It's kind of equally influenced by like people mentioned Mayer and, but a lot of Fleetwood Mac. And, we had this chorus, you can't look back, can't look back. There's no future in the past. You can't look back. And I just, me and my buddy wrote that, Trent Dabbs. And I was like, man, this feels like something really cool. But I kept trying to write like into the concept, like you can't look back. Like for every time you, someone tells you, you can't, or every time you hit a wall, like I was trying to write like into the concept of the song. And it kept being like, this is corny. This is like a Hallmark, song. And I just one day was sitting in my living room and I just was like, man, I should just tell some stories. And I wrote the first verses about leaving on this train. It's kind of borrowing my dad's story when he left town and sold some of his camera gear. The second verse was about this trip me and my friends took to Sayulita, Mexico, and ended up at this Argentinian princess's house at 2 a.m. and people were playing guitars and my friend was singing a hymn and we all ended up like swimming in the ocean. And I was like, yeah, that's what I want to talk about. I would rather tell those stories than just say something that's like, I don't know, reaffirming the chorus.
Wow. So those were, cause I was reading the lyrics and those are both true stories.
I mean, you know, everything yeah, no. Everything is somewhat true. And but no, honestly, like this character, you know, I was on a train out of New Mexico looking for a flame from a heart of coal. Like I've never actually left New Mexico on a train, but I did used to ride a train to college every year. My parents would drop me off at the Amtrak station. And I was kind of borrowing from my dad's story on that first verse. The second verse is literally true. It's characters galore in the Sayulita sun, pineapple pastor with the senoritas, all the disenfranchised kids in the hall. In the room we were baptized in the Pacific moon. Like that verse is spot on, literally autobiographical. There's a part where it says, someone put a cactus up to my tongue. I'd never talk about that lyric, but I will with you, I guess. This lady was walking around trying to feed people this vegetable. We're like, what is this? And me and my guitar player and my bass player. And I'm like, I was like, what are you trying to feed? She's like, no, have some. I'm like, no, what is this? She's like, it's peyote. I'm like, what? Peyote? I don't know what that is. And I'm like, did you say peyote? Like the drug? Like, I'm like, I'm good, man. I'm not trying to be like on some spirit quest in the middle of nowhere in Mexico. But yeah, that was just a really wild experience a much younger version of myself, but I have such fond memories of me and my friends, like kind of just throwing caution in the wind and being taken on this journey. And it seemed to fit into that chorus. And then the last verse is, this kind of reminiscing of this time in Birmingham, Alabama.
I see. That's so cool. That's, cause yeah, I saw it. I'm like, I was wondering if they were, based off of true things that happened. Cause a lot of your lyrics seem to be, that seems to be a big part of your songwriting are these personal lyrics. And so, so yeah, I was curious on that. And
I mean, the best stuff always is very closely related to something personal, and like, you know, life is better than fiction sometimes, you know, like writing that story would have felt made up, but it actually happened to me. So when you write down the specifics, sometimes it feels more real than, than you could ever make up.
Totally.
Sounds wilder too.
Yeah, no, totally. And well, did songwriting start out that way for you? Cause I imagine I'm not a songwriter in any sense, but did it always start out where it was personal, or was it there a time where you kind of gained comfort and started putting into these lyrics, these more things from your own life?
It was always way easier to be personal. I always felt like the nouns and the pictures and the images, you know, life is very rich for all of us. Like the specifics that make your experience were always really interesting to me, to be very specific. And I think that's attractive to people. And it's a skill to be able to learn how to like tell too much, so it just doesn't feel like you're like someone can't relate to it. And then also balance that line between telling too much and then not telling enough where there's some mystery to it, so people can find themselves in the story. But, yeah, it's always pretty much started with just me being really specific about my life. And that was kind of how I started, and it seemed to work for me. And it's definitely a huge thing that I return to.
I see. And I ask you that. And after I ask you, I realize I'm like, oh wait, I've never written a song, but there was a time when I was like going through like family stuff. And so I wrote a poem about my dad. And let me tell you, I would never share this with anyone. I kind of kept it personal, but I thought it was pretty good. So I showed my English teacher, because she liked me, but I talked a little bit too much. and I needed to get kind of back in her good graces before the term or the semester ended. And so this is 9th grade. I share the poem with her. She cries. Somehow my citizenship, I mean, I was getting sent down to like in school suspension, like as a joke. She like sent me twice, and she'd like show me, I'd come into the class. I wasn't bad. This is making me sound way bad. It was like a fun relationship with her, but,
I'm tracking.
I show her the poem. All of a sudden I get an H. I was an honor citizenship grade. My grade was always good in the class, but my citizenship was always like, could use improvement, not satisfactory. But I did some big work with a good poem about my life, and it got me there. And that's as far as it's ever taken me. So
that's awesome.
So I appreciate you taking those things and putting them out into the world. Well,
that's funny you say that, because that's kind of how I started. Was I was a terrible student, but I could always write, but I didn't know I could write. I just could write. It was kind of how I got through class, was through my writing. So I did well in English and those kind of subjects. So when I went to college, I became an English major. But to kind of make up for like whatever lack of research or lack of reading I had done, I would always start like an English paper with this super weird personal like thesis statement. Like I would write about my friend Lacey drove through town and she pulled up in her Land Cruiser and stayed, and like, I would get this really detailed thing, and then I'd be like, and I would build some argument about Robinson Crusoe, the book I read. And then I would always end it with this really like gut-wrenching like revelation about like maybe our relationship, me and Lacey, it's not the same. She's decided to do this thing and head in a different direction. And I'll always, you know, I'd tie it into some gut-wrenching moment, and my teachers would be like, whoa, like be really vulnerable. And like, I just found it so fun to be incredibly entertaining for my teachers. Like, and these deeply personal moments. And it kind of started my whole journey of writing. So I totally relate to that. Like, it was a somewhat manipulative too. Maybe I wanted an A, you know?
Yeah. You share a little bit and you get a little bit back.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's what a revelation to find out. That's so funny. I want to go back to, Can't Look Back. You said, I think it's such high praise for you to give your own song. And you said, if there's any song of yours that someone could listen to this or should listen to this year, that this might be the one. What is it about that song that you want listeners to hear?
Well, I said, if anyone's going to listen to one of my songs this year, it should be this one. Granted, I've only put out two songs this year. So, you know, it's not like, I'm just saying it's better than the other one, but that's not actually true. I really, really love this song. I just it's one that I don't know how pop it relates to the world, if like it's going to be a smash hit or like whatever, but I just really am proud of this like world that I've been able to create. And it's these really strange stories, maybe to me they seem strange, but then there's this really like kind of foundational chorus you land at of just simple, and I love that kind of music where there's some kind of complexity and uniqueness and very specificity to the lyric. Wow, that's a big word, to the lyrics. But then there's this very big general moment that everyone can latch onto, and that's hard to do sometimes for me. So I felt like I really executed it well with my buddy Trent, and I was just really proud of it. And I don't know if anybody else will like it, but I'm really proud of it and keep playing it in my car. And that's usually a good sign when I want to play my own music for myself.
Yeah. That's so interesting. And it is, you executed that song very well, and it's very relatable. And I think it is one that people need to hear. So be asking that wasn't just cause you said it, and it does deserve, I read it as high praise because I think it deserves high praise, and it is a great song. And it's such a subject that we all feel like what ifs, and looking at different times in our life and thinking what could have been, or could this have been different?
Yeah.
You mentioned, I have to pull from an Instagram caption that you said, and you said things about, with the feelings of a musician and times where you've asked questions like that to yourself, and that you've looked back in your music career. You didn't mention yourself, but I have to ask, is that something that you've experienced personally? Cause it set it up and it's like, wait, I want to know more there.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, my personality, how I'm wired, I'm learning about it every day. I'm not like the spring chicken anymore. So you kind of have some time to reflect, and you look back at different parts of your life. And I think a challenge and a temptation for me is always to be like, man, if only I would have done that there. Or like, oh, if I wouldn't have put that song out like that, or man, if I would have pushed harder, or did I compromise in that moment? And like, somehow you've set yourself on this trajectory today based on like mess ups you've made. And I think it's my like perfectionist kind of personality. It's part of the relentlessness that makes me, I think, good at what I do, but it also is just taxing sometimes to not be like, hey, you know what? I'm super grateful. And I'm like, this is where I'm supposed to be. This is literally like where I'm called to be in this moment, in this season of life. All of life has led me to be right here. And like, look at the world I have and these beautiful freaking kids. I just had like a new little daughter. Like, my life is very rich, and I'm very grateful for the moment that I'm in now, and I'm present in that. That's the other challenge that I want to be more like. And so I think this song is like playing with that tension and that voice that I constantly hear of like, man, maybe you should have gone left, but you went right back then. And man, you would be like that much more respected or successful or sleep better at night, or I don't know, just that's the temptation to dream about.
Yeah. And we all have it in different things, whether it's music or whether it's that. And it's funny because I'm like such a huge fan, and I have such a friend group that's such big fans of yours as well. So it's just funny because I'm like, I read something like that, and it's very vulnerable to share in an Instagram caption. It's also like in an Instagram caption, so it's like quick and it's like and it's sometimes so overlooked. I'm like, that's a very web. Like, wait, yeah.
Like, don't make me actually talk about this. I just wanted to put it in Instagram, you know, where no one has to deal with me. No, I mean, it's deeply real and it's like deeply painful. And like, for me, it's an ongoing thing that I've always faced. Is it's like, have I, like, at the end of a records, half the time you look at it and I can't even listen to it half the time. You know, you've been working on it so long, you're like, I failed, I'm terrible. And I think every artist enjoys that, has those ups and downs. But I also like, don't, I look at my life, I'm like, man, like, why do you have to do that? Like, you could also be really grateful and be present and be in the moment. And like, I bet you'll enjoy your life a little more than the other way of just always like worrying if you've screwed it up or I don't know.
Yeah. And that's the thing, I'm like, I've seriously loved every single one of your releases, and they're all you, but they're all different than the other. And they all have your same sound, but it comes from different inspirations. And I read you talk about in like a past interview from your last album about Paul Simon and him being a major inspiration for you, and that kind of way that he was able to do different, totally different things on different albums, but still keep the Paul Simon element. I think you do that quite well in your music. And so what has that been like, and what's some of the inspiration been like with kind of drawing from different things and having a kind of different approaches to each album genre and stylistically?
Yeah. I mean, I've always played with genre, and like, you know, my first record, Nothing Left to Lose, was kind of made a splash in some ways, 'cause there was even like spoken word, almost like hip hop influences and like rap things, but like singer songwriter. And I've always loved like that thing of playing with like genre or attempting different things. My last record was actually really almost electronic influence a little bit, with some of the like more indie DJ world, like not like big house music, but like more kind of Falou and these guys that make these cool understated electronic records. R.I.C. was a guy that worked on a song with me, like that kind of thing. So yeah, every record is funny. I get obsessed with certain things, and I tend to like to swing pretty far from where I was. You know, there's like the Ray LaMontagne, Jack Johnson style, which is like you really stick to a script and you build momentum that way. John Mayer, I would say, has done that, you know, like very much like build a world and they live in that world. And then there's other people that like, Paul Simon tend to change a lot. Like each record you didn't like, he would make a record with a South African influence. And then like one record was South American with like Peru and all these influences of folk music. Or, you know, David Bowie made a bunch of different records. Beck, you know, he's always borrowing influences. That was always more fun to me, to be able to like, what are we doing on this record? You know, and like, and trying on different things that maybe speak to culture or like aware of the popular culture, you know, that's just who I am. So I relate to that. And so every record is a little bit of a journey. You know, I have my voice and my songwriting and my perspective that hopefully ties them all together. But I definitely challenge you. And some people like that. Some people don't like that about my music.
No, well, I certainly like it. And you talked about kind of starting out with Nothing Left to Lose and having spoken word and kind of hip hop elements in there. What was that like? Was that something for like an up and coming artist, having that incorporated into music? Were there people advising against that? 'Cause it was so unique, but it's what I personally like fell in love with you with.
Wow. Thanks. No, there was nobody around. So there was nobody, it was my little brother who liked it and my friends, and that was it. And, I mean, I just grew up on that in Eugene, Oregon on like kind of smart hip hop music, like Tribe Called Quest and Outkast and like Mobb Deep and Wu-Tang and these kind of like real lyricist-y kind of driven stuff.
Yeah.
But I really resonated with like Lauryn Hill and Fugees and this band called Goody Mob, which was like Outkast's homies or whatever. And they would be really personal. Like the wordplay kind of like, I mean, I love Biggie in that kind of world, but that kind of style I didn't relate to, because kind of braggadocious thing. But like Goody Mob, like CeeLo, who now is CeeLo Green, he's like huge. He would just tell these crazy gut-wrenching stories, and that would be the verse. It wouldn't really relate. And then he'd sing the chorus, and I was like, dude, this is so interesting. And I didn't have beat, so I'd pull out a guitar, and I kind of would do my take of being vulnerable about my experience in like a story. And I didn't really know how to sing, so I would kind of make up a simple chorus. And that's really all it was. It was just the only skill set I had. I couldn't do anything else. So I just did the only thing I could do, which was kind of like tell these stories and then kind of sing and with over a few chords. And people really responded to it. And that grew into like my sound, I guess, people responded to. And I didn't know any better. And I got ridiculed for it later. But at the time, I was just trying to make my brother Patrick happy, honestly.
Wow, that's interesting. See, yeah, I was wondering what kind of, if there were people around at the time, because it is so unique, but it is what I think there's many people that love that. And I personally, like on a personal level, all I listened to from like sixth grade to like 11th or 12th grade was like hip hop and rap. And I was preparing to go on a like mission for my church. I'm very religious. And so I'm like starting to get ready, and I'm starting to feel bad about the hip hop songs I'm listening to and their lyrics. And I'm like, I need to, like, that was one of the goals. I'm like, I need to start like taking out some of that and stop listening to some of the music that I was listening to. And so I started just trying out different music. And that's actually when I found you. And so this was this perfect blend of like music that I didn't know I didn't know what I liked. And so my love of hip hop came from that's what I knew. And I didn't know what I liked, but I liked, oh, this has like cool beats and it sounds good. And I don't think I was taking in the lyrics really. And so,
yeah, man,
then I find you and it's this perfect blend of like, it has beats, it has like melodies, it has like you and it has the hip hop elements that I want. So it was like a big transformative, it like kind of bridged the gap from me like going and listening to straight hip hop to now having this diverse collection of things that
that's
I cool. listen to.
That's and awesome. So, it was probably, I mean, that's me. I was just emulating my influences, which sounds like your influences. So I was just kind of pick and choosing from what I loved. You know, I love James Taylor and songwritery stuff growing up in Oregon. And then I loved hip hop. So I was like, why can't I just kind of put it together, you know? And like, I think I did fill that void for a lot of people they like were into all that stuff. And, but it wasn't received like at that time to kind of, if you rapped at all or like even did something like it, you had to be kind of like from, an urban setting and be a part of that culture. And like, it was not cool. You had no kid, you couldn't be from the suburbs and like rap. That was not a thing. And now that's like, everyone is influenced and you could be anybody from anywhere and borrow from any of that hip hop thing. But it was just, there was still that really distinct genre line. Like, well, rock is this, rap is this. These are the kind of people that make that kind of music. And it was still, you would go to Tower Records and they would have the distinct sections. And like, now that's all been totally eroded. And there is no such thing as genre really anymore. It's just, it's very vague at best what genre is now.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful. But at the time, I remember Rolling Stone reviewing my record and being like, oh man, it's embarrassing that he thinks he can. It's just some like comment. I was like, God, this is, I stopped reading reviews after that one. I'm like, I can't do this anymore.
Wow.
Cause I just did it and I loved it and my friends loved it and people loved it, but they were like telling me why I wasn't allowed to do it. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm not allowed to do this.
Well, yeah. What's that like? Because you're seeing it being received. You're like seeing it being received well and people liking it and it is good. And it's just, I can't imagine that. And I write reviews.
I mean, no, totally. I wouldn't be as personal at the time. You know, it's like, I didn't know any better. I was just literally making music I thought was fun in my bedroom. I did learn that like, you know, it is really valuable to make people make a decision in something. Like, I think a lot of impactful art people have a strong reaction one way or the other to it. So that was one of the more successful times in my life I did that, where it's like, either you're like, ugh, I hate this, or I love this. And I think that's valuable, and a lot of great art does that. Not saying it was great art, but I think I was successful in that moment to make you make a decision on whether you thought this was okay or not. After that, you know, like similar people coming out of the woodwork, like musicians, you would know their name, or this is me like humble bragging or something, I'm already prefacing, but you know, big bands you maybe heard of would say, hey, I literally like didn't know, I listened to hip hop music, but I was kind of like secretive about it. And then I would make the songwriter music, and then I heard your music and I was like, whoa, he's doing the thing that like, I didn't know that someone could do, and you're doing it. And, you know, and they went on to be wildly, you know, they took that kind of thing of my ignorance in the moment and was like, so hey, he's doing it. And so I think there was some of that bravery that I was just ignorant and didn't know any better. I was just making music I loved, got a little ridiculed for it, but it did kind of open up in some ways that discussion of like, hey, who can do this? Who can't, you know?
Yeah. And that's incredible. And that's where I was like, that's why I wanted to ask about kind of the beginning, was I'm like, there has to be something here. And so I guess it all goes back. I'm curious, did you always know that you were going to kind of, you talked about your friend earlier from fifth grade and on, and that you guys have kept this really cool friendship and he's why you got into creative things. But did you always know that like you would do creative things and write these insanely creative songs and different creative ranging albums? Did you know that you were going to get into music like the way that
you
have?
No, man. I was just trying to like graduate high school. No, I didn't. I was a soccer player, actually. I was known as a soccer player in Eugene, Oregon. That's what I was. I was a really good soccer player, played on our state team and went on to play in college a little bit. But I was funny that I was like the weird, I lived in the photography room. It was really, we had this teacher, Sue Markley, who changed my life, and an English teacher. I didn't really know what I did. I just knew I was a soccer player, but loved doing creative things, and ended up spending all my time in the dark room and with this teacher, Sue Markley. And she had jewelry classes where we'd literally like melt metal and cast rings. And it was so insanely cool. It's still the coolest teacher I've ever had. And then I played soccer. And so I was like, when I got to go to school, I was like, I don't know what to do. I guess I'll go play soccer because I can do that for a couple of years. Went to Chico State, the school in California, and started taking photography classes, and was like, found that it wasn't as good as my actual high school teacher. And
wow.
But there was a moment where I was like, man, do I pursue photography or soccer? Well, soccer runs out, you know, like about junior year of college, you're like, I'm not going to go play in the World Cup. So, what else do I love? And at that point it had kind of shifted to English, and I did still know music in our family, had never picked up a guitar. And my roommate had a guitar in college, and I picked up the guitar and started playing, and I was so bad at music that it was easier to like kind of write songs than to like learn what Dave Matthews was doing or whatever, you know, in the time. So I just started playing songs, and like all of a sudden I realized all these skill sets that like I'd been developing, visual kind of imagery, writing, started to work in songwriting, and I just became obsessed with it and just started writing songs all the time. And my roommates would started gravitating towards it. And there was never a dream to be famous or do it as a career. It just literally was fueled out of, I have to do this. And I want to spend every minute writing songs.
Wow. And so if that roommate doesn't have a guitar, is there Matt Carney's music that we all know and love?
Man, I mean, probably not. I don't know. Yeah. Andy Valderrama and Kyle Wilhelm, they both two roommates, both had guitars. I owe them a lot. Yeah. There wasn't much. I would say in high school, on the way from our art department, was on this wing. South Eugene High School has a quarter of a mile long hall. It's this huge campus. And the art department is out way at the corner of the school. And you had to walk through this weird music school and stuff. And there were these practice rooms with pianos, and I would sit down and someone had taught me two chords on the piano. And I would sometimes stop and play these two chords, and I would like get caught up in this like really emotional moment just playing two chords. I don't know why, but just literally I could play two chords for like an hour, and it would like, I'd be almost brought to tears.
Wow.
By myself. But that was it. That was the only experience I'd had with music. I never thought about singing or writing. So I knew there was a deep, like something that really touched me deeply when music, when I played two chords, but that's all it was. I just thought it was for me and having, and just kind of having a moment with myself.
Wow. So what was the transition to then, kind of putting out music for people to hear and beyond? How did it gravitate from kind of just making it in your apartment with roommates and songs that you were making to then sharing it?
Well, I just started writing songs on guitar. And then I met this guy when I was home for Thanksgiving in Eugene, Oregon, back in Eugene. I met this guy who said, "Hey, I'm a producer." I didn't really know what that means, but he had a studio and we're like, "Let's write a song tonight." So we wrote the song. And then it was like, I actually had a recording on a CD. I was like, "Whoa, this is crazy." And we stayed in touch and started working on a few songs together. And that summer he said, "Hey, I'm moving to Nashville. I'm going to be a producer. I met some contacts there. Do you want to help me drive across the country? And if you help me drive, we'll like, we can record when we get to Nashville." And at that point I was so in at like, I had recorded a few songs. They had kind of like caught like wildfire in my old high school, which I just graduated. Like people were like, "Dude, did you hear Matt Carney's making music?" And like, I was like, so cool that I get these calls from friends like, "Dude, I heard the songs you made." I'm like, "Really? You heard the songs I made?" Like, it was so wild to me that people were responding to these recordings we were making. And this is pre like the laptop generation where you could just make, it was like right on the cusp of like where any kid could be a producer. So it was still kind of like a big deal to have like recordings of your music that sounded cool and good.
Wow.
You still were making music on computers, but not the laptop, like anyone GarageBand on every computer kind of thing. You had to know like Pro Tools or these weird softwares. And so we drove, he said, "If you help me drive to Nashville," we jumped in his truck. We slept in the back of it. Went up through Salt Lake, slept outside of Salt Lake, broke down in Boise, Idaho, actually on the way there, spent a couple of days at his cousin's house who had a weird bathtub full of jelly bellies. That's a whole nother thing. Stopped in Salt Lake, stopped in Kearney, Nebraska, because it was pronounced like my name. And then we ended up in Nashville and I was supposed to be there for a month. And we slept in this parking lot in the back of his truck. And I was my junior year going into my senior year, and I just fell in love. I'm like, "I'm not leaving town. I'm staying in Nashville. I'm pursuing music." Called my parents, was like, "Hey guys, I'm dropping out of school. I'm going to be a musician." And they were like, "What? Wait, what? You know, we didn't even know you did music, let alone when now you're dropping out of school for music."
That's amazing. What an amazing story. And just kind of how everything happened. It's like there's always been, there's like some been things pushing you to music, and then it's just, I'm really glad that it happened that way. That's really cool.
Yeah, man, it has been I am incredibly, it's even telling it to you, I'm like, this story is crazy. It's very, I'm just very blessed to have been able to be a part of music. It's just shocking to me still today that this is my job.
Yeah, totally. And so, well, I guess I wasn't planning on this question, but you get to Nashville, and Nashville, I don't know what it was then. I imagine it's always kind of been this really competitive place. When I talked to other artists that lived in Nashville, I talked with one, and she went to school at Belmont there, and she had written three songs in her life, and she felt very, and then she was at Belmont, and everyone is like, she's like, people came with like thousands of songs that they had written, and I did not. And so what's it like for you kind of being kind of more new to the world in such a competitive place like Nashville, those first little bit?
I think, you know, we showed up, and honestly, we weren't a part of the culture really yet. It was me and Rob. We could have been anywhere, honestly. We brought his recording gear. We started recording that summer. But some like influential people started hearing some of the recordings. And I think that was where our shtick kind of worked. Like the fact that I was kind of rapping and singing, but like acoustic world, like not a lot of people had done that. So I think our shtick got us going, you know, like sometimes having a little gimmick isn't bad. You know, if you're, you have to be able to back it up eventually with decent songs and like grow and mature. But at the moment, that's all we had was just like this kind of thing that people are like, what is this? So we got traction with different people in town really early. Like that's part of when I said I'm not leaving town is that some people I'd heard of and some artists and musicians and managers heard a few demos of mine and were like, wow, this is really interesting. Like, I think you've got something here. And that wasn't just enough of a boost to keep me in town. And it gave me enough excuse to go to my parents and say, hey, this dude likes my music. And like, he's a manager. And they're like, huh? Okay. it was enough to keep me going and keep me in town and validate this thing that I love so much.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I have one more question that I wanted to ask. And then I ask five to close every interview.
Love it.
And so I wanted to talk, you talked a little bit about your parents there. I wanted to talk about, you have, all your songs are personal, but, and I'm sure you know where I'm going, but Rochester is extra personal as you're telling like the true, like the story of your dad.
Yeah.
And I just have to ask what's it like writing? Cause you write so personal and vulnerable lyrics, but what's it like writing a song that's so close, but it's not about you. It's telling your dad's story. What was that song like to write for you?
I love Rochester. I'm glad you mentioned that one. I remember I was riffing on this kind of old folk standard that like Springsteen and other people have used, you know, I was born like, I'd play it for you right here. But, and I was kind of writing a story and I was sitting in my living room and I was like, man, no one's ever told my dad's story. He was born in Rochester. He was, had a pretty rough family. My grandfather was the town bookie and, he had a fake cigar shop and he ran all the town's bets through it. And the mob came to town in the 50s from growing outside of New York City. They started moving into Buffalo and Rochester and they said, hey, we want your business. And he's like, no, this is my business. You can't have it. And so soon after that, he was arrested and they had the police officers that would gamble with him all of a sudden one day showed up and put him in handcuffs. And my dad remembers when he was a freshman in high school, his dad was on the cover of the paper with his hat over his face in handcuffs. You know, town bookie gets arrested. So, you know, he had a chip on his shoulder, went through high school. He got drafted in the army. Was supposed to, during Vietnam, didn't actually get stationed in Vietnam, but served through there, followed Pink Floyd through Europe for a while after that. Became a lawyer. He met a guy who said, hey, if you come to Breckenridge, you can become a ski bum in Breckenridge. He moved to Breckenridge. He moved to Hawaii to be a deckhand on like a snorkel boat. He was kind of running, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And when he was in Hawaii, this lady walked up and she was a mermaid on a glass bottom boat, which is a real job. The glass bottom boat goes over the reef and she swims under there and like does a hula under the glass bottom boat in the water and like holds up starfish and stuff like that. That was my mom. So they met and were married after 4 weeks of knowing each other.
Oh my goodness.
Barefoot on the beach in Hawaii. And they moved back to Oregon and they kind of started this life as these two unique, broken individuals. And my dad was, you know, an addict in many ways and kind of had to wrestle with that and found his faith and all this journey. And I was like sitting there in my living room one day, I'm like, this is too good to be true. Once again, this is better than fiction. Like the real life. No one would believe this story. So I sat down and started writing the song. And I remember I started at about midnight and I wrote till about 4 a.m. and I was in tears half the time, just in awe of this like grace and journey that my dad had been on to kind of provide us with a different experience than his. And I was really nervous to play it for him. I remember there's this artist named Thad Cockrell, who's a talented songwriter. He came over the next morning to get his bag. And I was like, dude, listen to this song. And like, I'm like in tears and like playing it for him. And he was just like, whoa, bro. Like he was like hit with this wall of intensity of me, you know, if I've been staying up all night and like emotionally, he's like, whoa, bro, this is like intense. I need to just get my bag. Can I just go home now? You know, but I didn't even play it for him for a couple of weeks. And, I was just very nervous because it was so emotional. And now it's like really special moment every time I play it. And he like always wants me to play it when he's at a show that, you know, it's become a whole cool thing.
That's amazing. And that's one of those things where it's like, you listen to the song and you're like, wow, this is a great writer. Like this Matt Carney is a great writer. And then you find out that it's true. And it's like, wow, he is a great writer. And I can't imagine putting something like that out. And it sounds like the story sounds like a movie. Like it's really cool. And I've always really loved that song. And so I wanted to ask about it like selfishly. And so I appreciate you telling me and thank you so much.
Yeah, man. I think that you're true in that you've cracked my code, which is, I could never write anything as good as telling a story that already exists. So in some ways I'm borrowing a lot of thunder and a lot of my music and it's just part of how I've made my way. I could never create a whole world like some writers do. That's amazing to me. I just try to, I see these stories around me and I'm like, wow, that's story's crazy. And so you're kind of it's subservient to it, its power. You know what I mean? You're borrowing from it. And that's always been a thing that's really, made me tick and made me like want to explore writing is finding someone else's story.
Yeah. Now I'm curious if there's any of those college papers that you can turn into a song.
I wish I had them.
the thesis and ending of and working it into Robinson Crusoe. Okay. Well, like I said, I have the five questions I ask at the end of every interview. First is if you had to choose between breakfast food, lunch food, and dinner food, and you could only eat food from each meal group. So like only breakfast food, only lunch, or only dinner.
Wow.
Which group would you choose?
I'm going to say lunch, which is the worst. only because I just found out I might be allergic to eggs.
Oh,
terrible. I would have said breakfast food because literally all I eat is eggs. So that's a long story with a hippie doctor. Maybe it's all fake, but anyways, I'm going to say lunch.
Wow. I think you're the first lunch on the Road Trip Playlist podcast.
I know it's the worst. Dinner sounds a little too hardcore. Like you have to, everything's warm all the time. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I like food to be a little bit of like a fuel. So lunch I'm picking purely practically.
There you go. I like it. There might be one, but it was because they were a big sandwich person. And then number two is, what is your go-to karaoke song?
Dancing in the Dark by Springsteen.
Okay, that's amazing. Three is guilty pleasures that you have while on tour.
Guilty pleasures while on tour. It'd probably be some like bad TV show that I'm watching a series of.
Okay.
And those are interchangeable at different moments of whatever, like kind of spy. I get into some of the like just gratuitous, like dude shows. That's very sexist to say, but you know, they're very geared towards like some black ops, like special something happening. I don't know.
I see. Yeah. I'm glad you clarified because other people have said bad TV shows and they end up, it's like they're watching reality TV on the road.
Like Gold Rush would be one, you know, like do you ever see that show? Okay. It's like a bunch of dudes yet. Like mining. I don't know.
Oh, that sounds cool. Okay.
It's kind of cool.
number four is one. Who's a band that you'd like to hear one more EP from?
Fun. I miss those guys.
Oh yeah. That was, oh my gosh. Yeah. I remember finding Fun like early. It sounds the worst whenever you say you found someone early. Like it's so annoying when it's
listening. Yeah. I was listening to Jack Antonoff and he's Bleachers and Nate is amazing. And they made one record and that was it. And they never made another one. And like, I'm like, and they crushed the whole world with the album. It was like the biggest thing ever. And I'm like, guys, come on, figure it out. Make one more.
Yeah, that's so funny. No, that's a great answer. I love that. I think that's one that I haven't thought about, but that's one I want one more EP from. Five is who's an interesting guest that you recommend I have on the Road Trip Playlist podcast?
An interesting guest that you have on your podcast. That is a very interesting question.
It's a very selfish question. It's like, hey, is there someone I can use your name?
I love it. I think John Foreman is always an interesting human. The lead singer of Switchfoot. Every time I hear him talk, I'm like, that's interesting. There's also this guy named Anis Mujgani, who's a poet out of Portland. He was featured in a poem on my record, Just Kids. He has this poem called Shake the Dust.
Oh, and I know that. I remember that.
Every time I talk to him, he inspires me, and he is eloquent, and he loves ideas and life and pushing for something deeper. Anis is always inspiring to me.
Amazing. Well, I love that. Thank you so much. And thank you for your time. I have to ask, is there any kind of time frame with the record coming out?
Yes.
And so is it going to be, are you going to be releasing it like through singles or?
Yeah, no, we're putting out a couple more songs and then early next year it's coming out. So we haven't announced the date yet, but it is done. We're finalizing a few masters. We're shooting music videos. But yeah, spring.
Tex Armstrong. Is there going to be more Tex Armstrong?
I don't know. I really wanted there to be. That video was so fun to make, and we shot it over like 7 days. It was the most intense video we've ever made. The next one we did for Can't Look Back is like the opposite. It's just super chill and poetic and beautiful. But I would love to bring Tex back. You know, the world needs more 70s pro-am cowboy golfers. Like we need more cowboy golfers in the world.
Yeah, I love Tex, and I'll make sure to share the video in my write-up because, yeah, I loved seeing Tex. Anyway, thank you for your time. Like I said, this was a real treat for me, and this is like years of fandom being able to talk to you, so it's been a real pleasure.
Bro, my honor. Thank you so much. I love what you do, and can't wait to meet in person one day.
Yeah, I can't wait either. Thank you so much, Matt.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye.
Once again, thank you for listening to the Road Trip Playlist podcast and my interview with Matt Carney. Make sure to check out his new singles, Can't Look Back and Grand Canyon, available on Spotify, Apple Music, and wherever you listen to music. Matt Carney was a dream guest for me to have on the Road Trip Playlist podcast, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the Road Trip Playlist podcast in the review section of Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review to the Road Trip Playlist podcast. And stay tuned next week for an interview with Australian singer-songwriter Riley Pearce.